mankind has diverged into distinct races, or as they may be more fitly called, subspecies. Some of these, such as the African and European, are so distinct that, if specimens had been brought to a naturalist without any further information, they would undoubtedly have been considered by him as good and true species. Nevertheless, all the races would probably deserve to rank as man. It must not be supposed that the divergence of each race from the other races, and of all from a common stock, can be traced back to any one pair of progenitors. Charles Darwin, The Descent of Man. Taxonomy is the theory and practice of grouping individuals into species, arranging species into larger groups, and giving those groups names, thus producing a classification. There are millions of different organisms on Earth, so it makes sense that scientists want to classify them into groups. This gives scientists a common language to talk about different organisms, help organize them, and provides information about an organism based on its classification. Classification of many species, old and new, continues to be hotly debated as scientists find new information or interpret facts in new ways. Arguments are fierce, and species do change names, in large part due to recent advances in genomic sequencing, which is why many species are being re-evaluated because of DNA analysis, which can change our ideas of how closely two species are related, and so their classification can change. Classification in the 1700s was based entirely on morphological characteristics of the organism. In other words, those that looked most alike were put closest together in each category. Now, a radical shift in the grouping of organisms is occurring with the development of DNA technologies. Sequencing of the genetic code of an organism reveals a great deal of information about its similarity with and relationship to other organisms, and this classification often goes against the traditional morphological classification. Scientists are debating which species are most closely related and why. Before the 1930s, bonobos were considered a subspecies of chimp and were called pygmy chimps. But researchers decided, based on physical differences, that these smaller apes are distinctive enough to warrant separate species status. Although, in the classical view, species are not supposed to be able to interbreed successfully, that's not always true, and one example is with bonobos and chimpanzees. By analyzing great ape DNA, it was discovered that about 1% of the central chimpanzee's genome is bonobo DNA. This cross-species interbreeding happened twice, once about 1.5 million years ago, and again 200,000 years ago. These findings come on the heels of other genome analysis, such as between coyotes, dogs, and wolves, showing such gene flow between species. People have been reporting sightings of suspected dog-fox hybrids throughout history, but none have ever been confirmed until now. She barks like a dog, but her face and ears are more pointed than most dogs. She refuses dog food, preferring to catch and eat rats instead. DNA testing showed that she's the offspring of a female pompous fox and a male domestic dog. Domestic dogs have 78 chromosomes, while pompous foxes have only 74. In the case of Doxim, as she's called, biology decided to split the difference. Genetic testing confirmed that she has 76 chromosomes. So, despite coming from different species with different number of chromosomes, she can produce viable offspring because of the even number. An example I often give is the distinction between lions and tigers, which have a lot in common as both belong to the cat family, yet they clearly are not the same thing. They do not behave the same way. They have different genetics, different hunting methods. Tigers are longer than lions, more muscular, and generally heavier in weight. Although lions are taller than tigers, and obviously have a different appearance, such as the large manes male lions have around their faces. Tigers have stronger legs and are much more active and agile when compared to lions. By nature, tigers are considered to be more aggressive than lions, while male lions are even thought to be lazy in a way. Lions generally like to live in large groups called prides, where one male is usually in charge, and it's the female lion who hunts for food, bringing prey back to the pride, as the male lions rely on females for their meals. On the other hand, tigers prefer to live and hunt on their own. Tigers hunt for their own prey in the jungle, and then eat their catch alone. Therefore, one can say that lions are definitely more sociable than tigers. Yet despite these behavioral and physical differences, due to having different genetics, lions and tigers can produce viable hybrid offspring together, called ligers. Traditionally, it was believed that ligers are sterile, but recently, a liger in a zoo in Munich, Germany, gave birth. The father was a lion and the mother was a liger, so gene flow and hybridization can and does happen, and it has happened between different hominin species in humanity's past.
On May 16th, three female liger cubs were born at the Novosibirsk Zoo.
This is the second time Zita has given birth. Last fall, the young ligress gave birth to a female cub named Kiara.
In the case of a mule, for example, the offspring of a male donkey and a female horse. A horse has 64 chromosomes and a donkey has 62. So the mule ends up with 63, so they cannot reproduce, because it's individuals with an even number of chromosomes that are usually fertile. DNA has allowed scientists to better understand and redefine what makes a species, and we now know that different species can and do produce viable offspring, which brings us to the hybridization of modern humans. Admixture, the genetic merging of parental populations resulting in mixed ancestry, has occurred frequently throughout the course of human history. Numerous admixture events have occurred between human populations across the world, as well as introgression between humans and archaic humans, Neanderthals, Denisovans, and super archaic hominin species in sub-Saharan Africa. The mosaic of cross-species interbreeding has resulted in what is traditionally known as races, and our current understanding of this hybridization has irrefutably dispensed with the now obsolete out-of-Africa replacement model, which postulated a single origin for modern humans that allegedly left Africa and replaced all other hominin populations, mutating and evolving along the way. The replacement model is no longer a viable theory, as admitted to by its leading proponent, Professor Chris Stringer. Across an article this week quoting Professor Stringer, a British physical anthropologist noted for his work on human evolution and considered one of the world's foremost experts and proponents of the now obsolete and debunked out-of-Africa replacement model, which argued that human species left Africa and mutated into the various races we have today, killing or replacing the other hominins. We now know conclusively, genetically, that this is false, and that the various races exist today because of hybridization. We are all various mixes of these different hominin species. The article articulated what I just said like this, quote, "One definition of a species is groups of interbreeding natural populations that are reproductively isolated from other such groups, according to Encyclopedia Britannica. However, that definition may not apply for Homo species, as recent research describes evidence of interbreeding between Neanderthals, Homo sapiens, and Denisovans, a hominin species discovered in Denisova Cave in Russia. For example, a 2018 paper published in the journal Nature reported evidence of multiple episodes of interbreeding between Neanderthals and Homo sapiens. Another 2018 paper, also in Nature, described evidence of an ancient human hybrid who had both Neanderthal and Denisovan DNA. This has led some scholars to argue that many Homo species, including ours, should be lumped together. Stringer, however, maintains that humans and Neanderthals are separate species because their bone structure is different. If Neanderthals and Homo sapiens remained separate long enough to evolve such distinct skull shapes, pelvises, and ear bones, they can be regarded as different species, interbreeding or not. He wrote in an article for the Natural History Museum in London.
Well, at the moment, I'm certainly looking again at the whole question of a recent African origin for modern humans, because that's been the leading idea of the last 20 years, that we had a recent African origin, that we came out of Africa and we replaced all these other humans that were outside of Africa. And we're having to reevaluate that now.
I'm sorry, I don't think I quite heard that right. Could you please come again?
We're having to come and look out of Africa again, and also even look at the species concepts we've got.
Since genomes have started to become sequenced and compared, we now know that different species with different numbers of chromosomes do in fact interbreed and can produce viable offspring.
We're having to reevaluate the out of Africa theory, and we're going to have to reevaluate our species concepts, because on one view of thinking, species are self-contained units, they don't interbreed with other species. And for me, the whole idea of Neanderthals as a different species is really a recognition of their separate evolutionary history. The fact that we can show that they evolved through time in a particular direction, distinct from modern humans, and they separated maybe 400,000 years ago from our lineage. So they're in that position of being either a part of Homo sapiens, but a very different part to anyone alive today, or, as I prefer to argue, they're a separate species, a separate evolutionary history.
Neanderthals are genetically distinct from modern humans, but are more closely related to us than chimpanzees are, for example. The first modern human specimen discovered was called Cro-Magnon, so I use that term generically. Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon overlapped and interbred about 50,000 years ago, but never in sub-Saharan Africa. As a result, everyone today whose ancestors lived outside of sub-Saharan Africa at the time has inherited a small but significant amount of Neanderthal DNA, which makes up about 2% of their genomes. Sub-Saharan Africans inherited a much larger amount of archaic DNA from an entirely different species, but I will discuss that later. Which brings us to another distinct hominin discovery called the Denisovans.
And these strange people called the Denisovans. Now, we only know about them because of DNA work that's gone on in this site of Denisova in Siberia. So this is a cave that's been known for a long time. There were some very fragmentary human fossils from there, a finger bone, a couple of teeth, a foot bone. And these, each of them has yielded significant DNA. And the surprise was that that DNA was distinct. It wasn't clearly Neanderthal, it wasn't clearly modern human, it was something different. So Svante Paabo and his colleagues dubbed these people the Denisovans. And so we've got this site in Siberia with Denisovans, and now we know not only Denisovans are there, but the foot bone from the site has been analysed and has Neanderthal DNA in it. So this site was probably occupied in quite a short period of time by the Denisovans, by Neanderthals coming up from further south, we assume, and subsequently by modern humans. So remarkable site with three different kinds of humans living there in close proximity in time and space. But the big surprise was not only was there someone distinct in Siberia, maybe 50,000 years ago, but when whole genome scans were done with modern humans, it turned out that there was one group of living humans that were related to the Denisovans, that had Denisovan DNA in them. And these people are down in Australasia. They're in New Guinea and Australia. So that's also very unexpected.
Since Professor Stringer's interview, there's been additional data from people from Papua New Guinea and Australia. Denisovan DNA is barely detectable in most parts of the world, but makes up 4-6% of the DNA of people in Melanesia, which extends from New Guinea to Fiji Islands. People from China, Japan, and Korea have been found to have some Denisovan DNA in their genomes, around half of 1%, with populations in Central and South America having about a tenth of 1%. So people of the South Pacific certainly have the most Denisovan admixture, as well as a greater percentage of Neanderthal DNA than Europeans. And to help drive this point home with DNA, here's a short excerpt from a talk given by Professor David Reich, a geneticist known for his research into the population genetics of ancient humans.
While we were finishing the Neanderthal project, there was a finger bone in a cave in Siberia, southern Siberia on the border of Mongolia and Kazakhstan and Russia, that was marked as a modern human by the Russian archaeologists who excavated it. But in fact, when it was sequenced by this laboratory in Germany, it was found to be neither a Neanderthal nor a modern human, but something else entirely. It was a finger bone of a little girl. This is the size of it. And it was almost, it was amazing that it was even identified as human. But once it was sequenced, it was clear it was like nothing that we had ever seen before. The individual was, here's a, several Neanderthals, was farther, more distant from Neanderthals than any that were from each other, but genetically was more similar to Neanderthals than they are to modern humans. So this is a very interesting observation, and meant we had discovered a third population of humans, a second population of archaic humans. We did the same thing where we checked whether the Denisovan genome from Denisova Cave matched some humans more than others, and this was a particular interesting finding, when we compared this ancient genome to a Chinese genome and to a New Guinean genome. We found that the Denisovan individual matched New Guineans significantly more often than it did the Chinese. The interbreeding of Denisovans not only occurred with New Guineans, but with the ancestors of Aboriginal people from the Philippines and from Australia. And if you look in these black shaded circles in these pie charts, this is where the Denisovan ancestry is present today, highest frequency in the Philippines and in Australia and New Guinea, and also in people who have mixed with New Guinean populations as they spread out into the Pacific and into Indonesia. There's also a little bit of such ancestry throughout East Asia. And now we know of many interbreeding events amongst archaic humans and modern humans. I'm not going to go into all of them because each one of these is its own sort of struggle to figure out how it happened and explain. And I wanted to move on to the second part of my talk. In the second part of my talk, sort of another example where it was a great surprise. I came from Luca Cavalli Sforza School, where we thought we all came out of Africa. There was no interbreeding, and I was very much part of that school. My PhD supervisor was part of the group that established that, and when I came into the consortium, my very strong assumption was that that hadn't occurred. And we, my colleagues and I, worked extremely hard, harder than we otherwise would have, to make the result go away, because we were very skeptical that of the idea that interbreeding had occurred. But the data seemed to show it in every possible way, and we kept developing new tests, and eventually it's just unambiguous. Right now, there's just so many signals and signs of Neanderthal DNA evident in our genomes. If you're a non-African person, it's just extremely obvious at this point. And so the data forced our hand in that case, even though our assumption was that something different was going on. The question is, how many other ghost populations are there? I think there are hundreds. We already know many others. So in fact, there are many other cases where, for example, we have predictions of populations not yet found in the ancient DNA. What's clear from looking at genetic data, not just in Europe, but other places that we and others are beginning to get data from, is that people are the results of layers and layers and layers of mixture, that nobody's pure, and that, in fact, those ancestors were not pure either, that, in fact, people are just the results of mixtures and mixtures and mixtures, and the right way to look at this may not be that of a tree, but as a trellis, a kind of just layering and layering of mixing.
So I'd like to make 2 points here before we continue. The first is that I'm very glad to hear him admit he was wrong, as my entire academic career was spent fighting and arguing with professors like him about whether or not humanity was hybridized. In other words, interbred with different hominid species. And before the human genome was sequenced, every professor that I ever spoken to at the time unanimously insisted that it didn't happen, that one type of hominin left Africa and mutated or evolved into the various races without interbreeding, just mutating based on the amount of sunshine and other factors in the environment. Since then, especially during the last decade or so, it's been conclusively proven by DNA sequencing that the various human races came about by different admixture of different hominin species. The dominant contribution that we all share is Cro-Magnon. It was a seafaring race that traveled all around the globe. I guess you could call it similar to colonialism, and it interbred wherever it went. So while Europeans have about 2% Neanderthal, and Asians have slightly more, and there will surely be more hominin species announced in the coming years.
Which brings us to sub-Saharan African populations in West Africa, which are comprised of admixture from what scientists are calling a ghost species, because it has not yet been identified in the fossil record, but has been shown through DNA sequencing to be much older than Neanderthal or Denisovans, giving it the label of super archaic, since it is so far removed from modern humans. West Africans have been shown to contain from 2 to 20% genetics from this super archaic hominin species, which likely is either Homo erectus or Homo habilis, and is not found in the DNA of Caucasians, Asians, or any other non-African demographic. Since the DNA admixture is from 2 to 20%, scientists sometimes average this in the middle and say 11%.
We call it a ghost population because this is not a population which we have identified based on any fossil evidence. And what we find is this model, which has a ghost introgressing into the African population, does explain this conditional site frequency spectrum. We also looked at other models of introgression. Maybe this is not really a ghost. Maybe it's the Neanderthals coming back together and mixing. Turns out, again, we can reject this. It doesn't fit our data. And we can reject this model at a fairly stringent p-value. And one of the interesting aspects of this was a population that split off prior to Neanderthals splitting off from modern humans. So it's a fairly old population. And almost 11% of the ancestry of Africans comes from this ghost archaic population. So compared to the 2% or the 3% attributable to Neanderthals and Denisovans. So this had a fairly big impact in terms of how much ancestry comes from this population.
Additional research covering high coverage whole genome sequences of 15 sub-Saharan African hunter-gatherer males show signs that the ancestors of the hunter-gatherers interbred with one or more archaic human populations probably around 40,000 years ago, suggesting that the archaic African population and modern humans diverged around 1.2 to 1.3 million years ago. In addition, protein in the saliva of certain African populations, such as the Yoruba tribe, shows evidence that a species of archaic humans
contributed DNA into their gene pool, pointing to an extinct group of archaic humans, which appear to have contributed DNA into the gene pool of modern populations in West Africa. In other words, sub-Saharan Africans could not possibly have populated or turned into Europeans. They did not leave Africa and magically mutate 35,000 years ago, as they carry archaic DNA not found in the genome of Cro-Magnons. In fact, the evidence suggests things happened the other way around, where Cro-Magnon, fully modern, carrying some Neanderthal admixture, entered into Africa, mated with archaic species, which, as I said earlier, are 1.2 to 1.3 million years diverged from modern humans, crossbred with archaic hominids such as Homo erectus, which is now considered extinct, but who live on in the hybridized genetics of modern sub-Saharan Africans who have a greater cranial capacity today than Homo erectus had, thanks to this hybridization.
A news release by the Australian National University notes, citing new archaeological research, that Homo erectus, an extinct species of primitive humans, went extinct in part because they were lazy. The statement goes on to say, an archaeological excavation of ancient human populations in the Arabian Peninsula during the early Stone Age found that Homo erectus used least effort strategies for tool making and collecting resources. Researchers say this laziness, paired with an inability to adapt to a changing climate, likely played a role in the species going extinct.
Although hardly publicized by the Western media, there's more published scientific research refuting the out-of-Africa replacement model, showing that sub-Saharan Africans did not leave Africa within the past 60,000 years to populate the world, giving rise to other races. And in fact, it was quite the opposite, where fully modern humans entered into Africa, interbreeding with super archaic hominin species inside of Africa, giving rise to the modern sub-Saharan populations that still reside there today, that never left except through the relatively recent slave trade. The modern out-of-Africa argument really began in the 1970s, before scientists had the luxury of a fully sequenced human genome to compare to sequenced archaic hominin genomes, and was strictly based on a limited and poorly translated fossil record. The Afrocentric propaganda regarding mitochondrial Eve came about in the 1980s and was pushed by anthropologists in the 1990s, such as Professor Stringer, who has since backtracked considerably on his model of replacement without admixture.
So certainly, you know, I'm thinking a lot about species concepts. I'm thinking about the Africa model. But I've come around to thinking that it wasn't a simple origin. 20 years ago, I would have argued that the origin was maybe in one place, maybe in East Africa or in South Africa. There was a period of time just in one place where modern humans became modern. Perhaps forced by climate change, modern humans physically changed and changed behaviourally under a lot of stress to become modern humans, a punctuational event. Now I think it's not simple in that way. So for me, the African origin is still an uncertain.
In this article, director of the Genographic Project, an international study mapping the migratory history of the human species, genealogist Spencer Wells says that the Cro-Magnon people, beginning 30,000 years ago, dominated the human expansion into Europe and heralded the demise of the Neanderthal species. Of course, he assumes Cro-Magnon must have originated in Africa, which could not be the case, as Cro-Magnon's genome, such as this specimen from 28,000 years ago, did not contain the super archaic DNA found in sub-Saharan Africans and was virtually identical to modern European populations. Since Cro-Magnon was essentially a modern European, anatomically and genetically, when exactly did all of that alleged evolution from Africans take place? It did not, and Cro-Magnon did not originate in Africa. Watch my other videos to find out my views on Cro-Magnon or modern humans' actual origins. The incumbent theory presented by mainstream academia is that roughly 60 million years ago, pro-simians took to the trees. Pro means before, simian means monkey or ape. So after the cataclysmic event that ended the age of the dinosaurs, a theoretical mammal called a prosimian, similar to a rodent, is said to have moved into what became trees and allegedly evolved into monkeys. Some monkeys then came down from the trees and began spending part of the time on the ground, evolving into apes, with chimps and gorillas stemming from a common ancestor about 10 million years ago. Then, as the theory goes, somewhere between 5 and 7 million years ago, as I was taught, apes allegedly transitioned into bipedal hominins, which then supposedly gave rise to humans, with some desperate studies recently claiming that early humans were still swinging from the trees 2 million years ago, which I find laughable. Almost all archaeological digs in Africa focus exclusively in the strata focusing on the time period hypothesized for this missing link. The theoretical specimen demonstrating a primate transition into bipedalism, but has remained elusive, especially for researchers whose paychecks do not depend on corporate or federally funded academic institutions. Of course, there have been many errors and fakes presented to the public, such as the Piltdown Man, which for the first half of the 20th century was prominently displayed in the British Museum and in scientific textbooks, turning out to be an ape's jaw, fraudulently bleached, and then glued onto a human skull for close to 50 years, or the Nebraska Man, which was an imaginary missing link that turned out to be dreamed up from a pig's tooth. This article published by BBC is titled, "We Still Have Not Found the Missing Link Between Us and Apes," that not only admits that we haven't found anything that resembles the last common ancestor between humans and apes, labeled the missing link, but goes on to state that there isn't even agreement among anthropologists on what the last common ancestor might have looked like. Now, just last week, it turns out that a hominin specimen touted as humanity's earliest ancestor was not a hominin, and thus was not the earliest known human ancestor. In a paper published in Journal of Human Evolution, a team of researchers from France have found evidence that the Sahelanthropus chadensis, which mainstream anthropologists claimed walked upright between 6.8 and 7.2 million years ago, which is twice as long ago as the famous Lucy, dated to about 3.2 million years ago, actually did not walk upright and thus was not a hominin, but instead an ape ancestor that walked on all fours like gorillas and other great apes. So it was not a hominin, and was therefore not an early human ancestor. That said, we don't even have transitional forms between Australopithecus, such as Lucy, and the Homo genus, which includes bipedal hominins such as Habilis, Erectus, Denisovans, and Neanderthal, not to mention Cro-Magnon, or modern humans. And yet, the mainstream media and academia tries very hard to force obsolete paradigms to work, despite persistent and obvious gaps in the fossil record, which seem to be pushed to support a political agenda, like out of Africa theory, which involves claims that an ape-like foot with a big toe that sticks out to the angle like a thumb, obviously used for grabbing branches, was actually a bipedal hominin ancestor displayed in many museums. Not only do I have a problem with the simian anatomy that some anthropologists try to pass off as bipedal, meaning upright walking, nothing that walked upright like we do had all that fur. Unlike apes and monkeys, we sweat a lot. And there's an explanation for this, which has to do with how bipedal hominins hunted. People cannot outrun most animals, like a gazelle, for example, which can reach speeds of up to 60 miles per hour in short bursts, but it cannot sustain that for hours. People, however, can run for long periods of time, and this is demonstrated in marathon runners, where sweating becomes a necessity to be able to cool off after running down animals right before plunging a weapon into its exhausted body. So these upright bipedal hairy specimen with hands as feet, allegedly almost human, are paleo art and created to push a political agenda, not a scientific one. All aspects of the out of Africa theory lacks empirical evidence, from how races came to be to the hominin origins coming from tree dwellers. No ancient origin myth or religion attributes our start to monkeys. Many of them, in fact, claim that apes evolved from us, where the common ancestor took to the trees after some sort of global cataclysm, and instead of the other way around. If this sounds counterintuitive to you, it's now being proposed by members of the scientific community, so it's worth taking a look for yourself, since the media has no incentive to report on such things. Dr. Owen Lovejoy is a distinguished evolutionary anthropologist at Kent State University, Ohio, best known for his work on Australopithecine, locomotion, and the origins of bipedalism. Lovejoy has published more than 100 articles related to his research and is most well known for his work on reconstructing Lucy, an alleged human ancestor with an opposable big toe on its feet, meaning they resembled thumbs for grasping branches and climbing trees. While Lovejoy claimed that Lucy, which was dated to 3.4 million years ago, was at least partially bipedal, he proposes that Artie, another alleged human ancestor dated to between 4 and 5 million years ago, spent more of its time allegedly walking than Lucy, despite being over a million years older. This article titled, "Man Did Not Evolve from Apes," says, "A U.S. biological anthropologist says he's determined humans did not evolve from apes, but rather apes evolved from humans." Kent State University professor C. Owen Lovejoy, who specializes in the study of human origins, said his findings came from a study of Ardipithecus ramidus, a hominid species that lived 4.4 million years ago in what is now Ethiopia. Quote, "People often think we evolved from apes, but no, apes in many ways evolved from us," Lovejoy said. It has been a popular idea to think humans are modified chimpanzees. From studying Ardipithecus ramidus, or Artie, a partial female skeleton, we learned that we cannot understand or model human evolution from chimps or gorillas. Of course, Lovejoy is still very much in the mainstream, and while he proposes that humans and apes shared a common ancestor that was neither human or monkey, at least he makes it clear that the popular idea that humans are modified chimps is false. My own analysis is that neither Lucy or Artie, which were a little over 3 feet tall, walked upright at all, and were both primarily tree dwellers, not only because their feet resembled hands like other apes, but because their furry ape-like bodies did not sweat, the way all bipedal hominins do, as sweating is a trait that is associated with running and hunting, which neither of these specimens did. The artistic reconstructions in museums are deceptive, showing erect, upright models with human-like feet, which is a fraud, and while they're not completely fake specimens like the Piltdown Man, which was a baboon's jaw glued onto a human skull and touted as the missing link by the British Museum for almost 50 years, or the Nebraska Man, which was another imaginary creation based on what turned out to be a pig's tooth. The missing link is still very much missing, and the linear hominin progression proposed by the Out of Africa model continues to fall apart as advances are made in the field of genetics. The obsolete and politically motivated Out of Africa model proposes a single and relatively recent transition from archaic hominins to anatomically modern humans in Africa, which is not supported by the fossil record, followed by a later migration to the rest of the world, replacing other still existing hominin populations, which again is not what happened. DNA sequencing of modern and archaic genomes has now conclusively and irrefutably demonstrated that humanity is a hybrid species and that racial differentiation exists because we're comprised of various degrees of different hominin species which interbred within the past 50,000 years. In this article published in Nature, we read that ancient humans lived in a Lord of the Rings world and indulged in interspecies sex, including Neanderthals, Denisovans, and a mystery species. It's considered super archaic, not yet identified in the fossil record, but likely Homo erectus or Homo habilis, over 1 million years removed from modern hominins, and comprises up to 19% of sub-Saharan African DNA, not found in the DNA of Asians or Caucasians. This interbreeding event happened about 43,000 years ago in Africa.
How did the different types or races of man, if you will, appear on the planet?
By hybrid mixes. And that's how all the races came about, through mixings and crossbreeding.
Yeah, because I never bought into the story that someone could walk out of Africa and then over time, the skin tone changes, the facial features, and the structure of the hair changes. I never really bought into that.
Yeah, and that's what we're taught, and that's what textbooks say, but it's false. And we need to understand what the true history is. Out of Africa, the African Garden of Eden has become a strict part of the Darwinian paradigm. This is where the professors and experts tell us that all mankind came from Africa. I don't believe this is true. This is only about 25 years ago that the African Garden of Eden, the African Eve, became popular and became a fixed idea in Darwinian evolutionism. But it's not true. And as you say, it would be impossible for the African to migrate out and go to Sweden and turn white, to go to China and turn yellow. Those are fairy tales that they're still teaching in school.
Humanity is a hybrid species, which has been established by genetic research and should be obvious by the facts that there are still anomalies that occur during the hybridization process. The most obvious example being when the body of an Rh-negative mother tries to reject her own baby if it's Rh-positive as an allergic reaction, recognizing it as foreign to herself, which in modern times is easily taken care of through the use of a shot, but still speaks to the reality that this incompatibility is a result of hybridization and that we are descended from different hominin species that all interbred in ancient times, where ancient cultures interacted with each other, some advanced, some primitive, some agricultural, some hunter-gatherer, and the idea that humanity is the result of a smooth, linear evolution from a single source is proven false, as certain populations have DNA exclusive to themselves, which makes the ancient myths, legends, and biblical stories sound more plausible, and the obsolete theories, such as the Out of Africa hypothesis, sounds more and more like a politically motivated fairy tale. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.